Hi there, and welcome to Heard Online, a series of episodes where we look at articles and videos that we find online and take a critical look at them. And in today's episode, we are going to look at an article that was suggested from a member of the NATO Nation, a member of our community right here, Ryan. And it is from Psychology Today, and it's about four ways how to cope when worry. Let me read this again. Four Ways to Cope When Worry Disrupts Your Sleep by Alice Boyce, PhD. And I think there's a lot that's really helpful there. I'm going to add some of my thoughts and react a little bit to what she writes as well. But first of all, let's hear what Ryan found helpful here. Ryan wrote to me actually back in June before I was on vacation and said, I think you really appreciate this content. It echoes a lot of your approach to insomnia. And then he said, the one thing that was new and helped me was to feel and not feel bad about scaling back my expectations about the day. I think I've gotten the message that even with a terrible sleep and feeling unrefreshed, that you're supposed to just live your life to the fullest, even if you don't feel like it. The author states, it's okay to be more relaxed about your expectations for the day. That was reassuring. Thanks, Daniel, for all you do. Thank you, Ryan, for submitting this. And without further ado, let us take a look at at this article. The author, Alice's Twitter. I didn't follow her. She doesn't follow me, but she refers to Seth Gilliam, who I follow and I know. So I feel like I have some connection to her. Maybe I've read other articles from her or something like that. But anyway, so you can see her. Alice Boyce is the author of this article from Psychology Today, and let's look at the key points from its article. So number one, having trouble falling asleep or waking up can establish itself into a pattern at lightning speed. You know, I think the lightning speed here has an element of that's a little bit alarming, okay, you should really pay attention here, which I think generally speaking, I think it's always so helpful when you see that there's actually nothing to worry about. There's nothing to fear, et cetera. But on the flip side, you got to do something to get people interested in what you're saying. So, just a little comment on that. Now, second one here, super interesting. When a person doesn't feel safe, often their body won't let them sleep, since that would be dangerous from an evolutionary standpoint. I think the second key point is super, super, super helpful to see. And I talked, when was that? Was that last week? I think it was last week that I talked about how the difference between sleep disruption and insomnia, and how that sleep disruption or poor sleep is actually evidence that your sleep system is working really the way it's designed. And this is exact same point being made here. When we don't feel safe, or when something is kind of disrupting us, we're designed not to sleep so deeply and so much, whether that is pain or a sense of fear or anything else that creates hyperarousal. So I think this is a really, really great point to make. And another point is reducing your expectations of yourself to 50-70% of your usual may help you cope when you're tired. I think this we'll talk more about as we read through this. And to me, this is going to become like a courage versus kindness type of thing. Like, on one hand, it can be so helpful to do whatever you plan, even if you slept very little, right? Just live your life and do your thing. That can be so helpful to have courage and kind of find the reserve energy and do things you like. On the flip side, kindness is also so helpful, because when we push ourselves too much, then like Ryan, I think it probably had done, then we get into another cycle effort and force and judgment, etc. So just some immediate thoughts there. Let's read this article. So Alice writes, I'm currently yawning my way through writing this post after 5 nights in a row of rumination disrupting my sleep. I've been getting to sleep fine, but have been waking up to pee, only to be unable to get back to sleep for hours. One night I woke at 2 a.m. and didn't get back to sleep at all. And so from this paragraph, we can see that it doesn't sound like Alice is someone who has what we call insomnia, which is more of an ongoing self-perpetuating, struggle where there's not rumination about something else that causes us to have some struggle sleeping, but the rumination and the fear of not sleeping in itself, right? So what Alice writes here is sort of what I share when people ask me, Daniel, have you had insomnia? And I say, not really. I've had, like Alice, I've had many times where I've been stressed for some some reason, and I haven't slept much, and I've, you know, I can relate very much to this, but, you know, just a little comment there. I think Elsa is probably a similar place to me, can understand very much, but hasn't really gone through insomnia herself. Now she writes, I sometimes like to write posts when I've personally been having the problem I'm writing about, because these experiences always remind me of how in practice I use and adapt the techniques I learned in my training. And she says, here's what I've been finding helpful. Number one, acceptance. Stress sometimes overloads our nervous system. When this happens, it can lead to sleep disruption. The word overload is maybe a little vague. I don't know exactly what that means, but I think we all can understand what she's trying to say here. When we're very stressed, when there's a lot of things going on, it can lead to sleep disruption, no question about that. Our sleep is very rhythmic. Therefore, a habit of trouble falling asleep or waking up can establish itself into a pattern at lightning speed. Even a few nights of disruptive sleep can sometimes set you up in a pattern of waking up at a particular time, which can be frustrating. Well, we often talk about something we call Swiss awakenings, of course. Swiss awakenings is the word. And that is when, you know, we randomly wake up, we see that it's 3:30 a.m., and then the brain goes like, oh, something happens at 3:30. We better be prepared for that. And then we wake up again at 3:30, and we look at the time and we see that, oh, I woke up again. It reinforces the idea that, oh, this, you know, something important happens. We should wake up at exactly the same time. Just like we often wake up just before our alarm clock, you know, we can get entrained into these patterns. And I think, again, this is nothing strange or unusual. It's, again, just evidence that our sleep system is working the way it's designed to work, to wake us up when there's a sense that something important may happen. So I just want to point out that I think what she's sharing here is exactly what we call Swiss awakenings. But the tricky thing here is when we think that, okay, a pattern, like if we get into like this bad habit of waking up, then we have to like undo this habit or do things to make the habit go away. I think it's much more like understanding that how this happens, like we talked about, how Swiss awakenings happen, and then, you know, letting it be, maybe not checking the time, but there's nothing else that is really, really problematic here. Meaning insomnia comes from a fear of not sleeping, not from like, oh, I've started to associate the bed with being awake. That is just sort of a superficial manifestation of a deeper rooted fear. Let me put it that way. All right. I'm realizing I can't comment as much on every single paragraph. Anyways, the types of stress that overload our nervous system is often related to our values. For example, if you value being cautious, then having made a mistake might be particularly disruptive. If you value being prepared, then a sense of something being outside your control might be particularly likely to overload your body's physical systems of stress management. That paragraph was like, I didn't fully understand it when I read it. But then in the next one, I'm like, ah, now I get it. And she writes, I find it helpful to see the link between my values and why an event is bothering me so much. This helps prevent thinking, I should be able to cope better than this. I must be a weak/fragile person. So I think what she's trying to say here is that maybe something that is valuable to you is being cautious, being prepared, being a bit careful. Maybe you are, you know, what we call like a type A person, or You know, on the spectrum of, you know, all the normal varieties of humans there are, you may be a little bit more anxious. And therefore, it can help to see that, you know, it's not like, oh my gosh, I should cope better. I shouldn't be up at night. I shouldn't be awake here. And because that's just self-judgment. When we see that who we are, what our values are, then we can be like, oh, this is not strange. This is nothing strange or unusual here. And she makes the point, in fact, this is actually aligned with my values of being a person who's prepared. So I think that was really nice. And I think that normalizes our experience is so, so helpful. And she says, during my time lying awake, I've been mentally replaying interactions related to two categories of current stress in my life. It's helpful to understand why these are causing me so much turmoil and that not every kind of stress has this impact. I think just generally normalizing everything is so helpful again. Two, she says, she talks about the second thing that was really helpful, sleep-specific compassionate self-talk. Falling on from the above point, you can use sleep-specific compassionate self-talk. For example, I'm ruminating because my system thinks there's an emergency It's trying to keep me safe by not letting me be in the relaxed and vulnerable state that sleep is. That's super nice. I love this. I really love this. This is, you know, what you hear me say over and over again. This is happening because we have a brain that wants us to keep us safe. This comes from a place of like, you know, I don't know, you know, our brain loves us. It kind of sounds odd, but in a way, like, this all comes from a place of like really wanting us to be safe, right? So I agree 100% with this. Or my body's designed to establish a sleep pattern. It's doing exactly that, even if the pattern currently is inconvenient for me. Exactly the same idea. It's all normal, just a part of like the evolutionary role that the brain has. It's a survival machine. 100% agree. When we don't feel safe, our body won't let us sleep, since in an evolutionary sense, that would be dangerous. Again, the same point made, really nice. My Psychology Today colleague, Dr. Seth Gillingham, who I know a little bit, talks about how we need mindful trust to allow ourselves to rest. Try incorporating mindful trust into your compassionate self-talk. And this is where things get tricky, you know, because we see that when we're like, okay, this is what the brain is designed to do, we don't need to do any further, then there is no struggle. But then we can think like, oh, I need mindful trust. Oh, where can I get mindful trust? How can I do mindful trust? Then we're like engaged in a struggle again. Then we're not trusting, right? So I think the word need is a little tricky, but that's where you probably don't hear me say so much like this is a must, or this is even this important. I don't use that much, but must or need, I don't use those words so much. But say instead of, you know, mindful trust can really help is how I maybe would word it, so to help us not get into so much struggle. Anyways, just a little detail. Number three, behavioral activation during the day. Behavioral activation is maybe, I don't know if it's considered a technique or a teaching, but it's commonly taught in CBT. And the way I think of behavioral activation is that. That word is, you know, it sounds kind of like much of the CBT language. It's kind of like, what does that mean? It sounds kind of technical or cumbersome, or, you know, I think of behavioral activation as just doing what you feel like, doing something that's meaningful, fun, or engaging, or unusual, or just do something you feel like, and do something like, you know, something like that. I think of as behavioral activation. Now, with that in mind, let's read this. Behavioral activation is a proven mood management strategy. Yeah, I think, to me, this is a little tricky when we think of like, okay, this is evidence-based. This works for other people. This is going to do it. This is a proven technique. I'm going to employ this technique. Then we're trying to control our thoughts, control how we feel and things like that. So that wording is a little tricky, I think. Anyways, it involves doing a combination of activities that give you pleasure and activities that produce a sense of accomplishment. People often misunderstand behavioral activation. It's not just soldiering on and gritting your way through the stress. When people perceive it this way, they're often making one or two errors. They don't recognize that a little behavioral activation can go a long way, and they forgot about the pleasure part. I think this is very true. Oftentimes when we hear like, when, you know, somebody in the community here hears me say, you know, you can do something you like even if you haven't slept much, that in itself can become like a struggle. Like, oh man, I gotta do something I really enjoy today, so that I can show myself that I'm fine even though I don't sleep, so that I can sleep. Again, it become maybe where Ryan was, this place of effort, and then we don't do so much during the day, then we judge ourselves like, dang it, I should have done more today. I didn't go to that event that I was supposed to go to. Now I failed, and I, this is no good, etc. Not at all. I think she makes a really good point here about when we push ourselves too much, and when we put effort in something and think something will lead to something and we have to do something, that's not going to be helpful. So she says, to the first point, I spent during these 5 days of some struggle here, I spent about 10 minutes yesterday doing pregnancy related exercise, and that was enough to make me feel like I achieved something personally meaningful in the day beyond work. 10 minutes, that was all. And over a week ago, I drove to a mountain 45 minutes away and did a short hike. The peace I got from that experience still feels like a place I can mentally return to, even though it was 10 days ago. You don't need to stuff your days full of activity for behavioral activation to work. Try reducing your expectations of yourself, say 50 to 70%, depending on how little sleep you got. That part I think is very tricky when we have numbers and we start calculating, oh, I slept half as much as I usually do, then I should cut my expectations down to 50%. What does that translate to? I think that's very, very tricky. To me, I think courage and kindness. You know, that's what I think when I read this, that yes, it helps that to see that we can do things that we maybe didn't think we could do, even if we didn't sleep much. But on the flip side, if we feel like, you know what, today I just need to rest, take it easy, be kind to yourself, super, super helpful. Kindness to me really, really helps so much. Number four, giving up control. When your brain won't let you sleep, you can infer that your subconscious thinks you need to solve the problem you're having right now. For example, if you're ruminating over a weakness or imperfection, your brain thinks it needs to and can resolve that if only you endlessly think about it. Realistically, the problems that cause sleep disruption often can't be resolved straight away. They're usually not entirely within our control, and they'll be resolved through a process that takes time, and we can only allow to unfold. What you can do in this scenario is radically give up control. You can tell your subconscious, I can't resolve this right now. Alternatively, you can say to yourself, I don't need to solve this right now. I'm safe enough that I don't need to solve my problems of being, insert your self-perceived flaw right now, I don't know, too anxious or something like that. And I of course agree with giving up control. It's really all I teach is about like letting things be, you know, not being attached. And let's not add anything more to that one. If it appeals, you can even try into some irreverence into your self-talk. You can say, my brain thinks I can solve the problems of the world overnight right here in my PJs. You know, maybe that can be helpful as well. So a positive note, she says, finally here, I published this a few days after I drafted it, by which time my sleep problems had resolved, which again goes back to maybe one of the first things I said, which was that didn't sound like this was what we call insomnia, but more sleep disruption from, you know, some stress, rumination, etc. That is so very common. But I still think, like she said herself, that her points, there was a lot of validity in her points, because even, you know, the same mechanism that is at work when we have a sleep disruption from stress is the same that will cause insomnia. It's when we're like, oh, I'm afraid that they won't like my presentation at work. What if they don't? You know, what can I do? We have the sense that you can control other people's reactions, therefore you stress, therefore you sleep little. And when we see like, oh, I can't control other people's reactions, you know, we'll see if they like it. If they don't like it, that's probably okay too, right? That's how we can meet, let's say, work-related stress, and that's also how we can meet insomnia. It's really all the same, I think. So with that said, I'm curious to hear what you thought about this article and my commentary on the article as well. Please let us know in the comments. And as always, if you're finding everything you need here to arrive where you want to be, then that's fantastic. Please let us know. And on the other hand, if you find that, you know, you would like somebody to contextualize things for you and do seeing how the teachings here fit with your personal situation, then please head over to our website and check out our coaching options. If you decide to join, we look forward to seeing you on the other side. With that said, have a beautiful day, and I'm rooting for you, and hope to see you back soon. Bye-bye.